Hi, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It is Thursday, March 28th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. I'm speaking today with political correspondent Tal Schneider. Hi, Tal.
Good morning, Jessica.
At least three people were wounded, one seriously, when a bulletproof school bus and several cars came under fire during a shooting attack this morning in the Jordan Valley. Up north, missile alert sirens sounded also this morning in the communities near the Lebanon border, in the mostly evacuated towns of Gornot HaGalil and Goren. The parents of hostages will meet with the prime minister this morning, demanding an answer on his plans to bring their children home. Late last night, Wednesday night, the government asked for a last-minute high court extension until 2 p.m. today, in order to respond to petitions demanding the immediate conscription of ultra-Orthodox yeshiva students. We'll discuss that, along with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's flip-flopping on meeting with the U.S. administration and overall what his political future looks like right now. We'll also talk about the passing of Senator Joe Lieberman yesterday. We will discuss all of that on all fronts in today's podcast, but just before we get started, I wanted to point out a new project from our reader support group, the Times of Israel Community. It's a time when Israeli artists are finding it increasingly difficult to share their work around the world. Times of Israel Community is celebrating and supporting them with a new series of Israeli documentary films called DocuNation. It includes 8 award-winning Israeli documentary films and the ability to meet their creators in exclusive live online discussions. All funds for this project will go right back to the documentary filmmakers and to their budgets. You can learn more about DocuNation at timesofisrael.com/doc. That's timesofisrael.com/DOC. Okay, we'll get into all of today's headlines after a quick break. Do you or your clients have a commercial collection matter that's going nowhere? The Sarachuk Law Firm specializes in the most challenging collection matters, whether it is a single matter or a portfolio of cases. They are based in New York with relationships around the world. Sarachuk's proprietary databases and tried and proven methods have earned them an unmatched reputation for success in getting their clients what they're owed. They work on a contingency fee basis, so they're only compensated when they succeed. The Sarachuk Law Team strongly supports Israel. You can reach the Sarachuk Team at www.sarachuklawfirm.com. That's S-A-R-A-C-H-E-K lawfirm.com or at 646-403-9775. The proceeding is an attorney advertisement and past results are no guarantee of future performance. Tal, so talk us through last night's, what we're calling a U-turn, as the government requested an extension to the high court deadline to file a response to petitions demanding that it immediately start conscripting Haredi yeshiva students as of April 1st, which is Monday. But really, what are we really talking about here? It's not the U-turn, it's this April 1st deadline and what that actually means.
Right, Jessica. So the recruitment of Haredi yeshiva young people at the age of 18 has been a long, many years long argument inside Israel, about maybe 30 years long, where people are appealing to the high court and being rejected or postponed time and time again. But this year, it's different. The difference is that Israel's IDF has announced a couple of months ago that it can no longer afford to waive many of those young people because the military is in a dire position to have more people. We lost, 600 soldiers were killed during the war. About 3,000 were severely or lightly wounded but are not able to go back to service. Hence, the military is in a need for people, and they say it again and again. So in Israel, nobody thinks that the yeshiva boys are going to just jumpstart and become combat soldiers on the ground with tanks, but they can definitely help with manpower all over. And the secular and religious public in Israel claims that it is no longer the game that it used to be. The authority to release those yeshiva boys is going to expire just this coming Monday or April 1st. What a day for this expiration, because everybody know they're not really studying. They're just saying they study. And the Attorney General was supposed to submit last night the response of the government to the Supreme Court, but the government, including its ultra-Orthodox members, was unable to reach any kind of decision. So she said to the High Court, I will submit my response by Thursday today at 2 p.m. You know, by the time you're probably going to listen to this podcast, she's going to submit it. And she is saying in this submission...
She, the Attorney General.
The Attorney General, Gali Baharav Meira, she is saying in the submission, as of Monday, this government has to start recruiting ultra-Orthodox young people. And if they don't need to do it immediately. They can do it gradually. You know, it's going to take some time. She doesn't expect it to start on Monday. But, and this is the crucial part, if they are unable to recruit them, they can no longer finance their yeshiva high schools and, you know, after high schools, you know, programs. Money is going to be cut. And this is the big problem. Obviously, it's a political problem. As the ultra-Orthodox say that if they don't get this assistance from the government to finance this kind of way of life, they will step out of the government. This means maybe government collapse. We don't know that. I'm just saying it, you know, in a careful, you know, manner, because they've been threatening to do that for so long, for years. They never step out of government on that issue. And on the other hand, Likud, who is the ruling party, and other parties like Religious Zionists, they're losing the support of their people day by day because they're not recruiting people from the yeshiva world. So Likud and also Bezalel Smotrich, finance minister, actually, he's not even able to get any you know, public support at the moment. He has zero public support. When I say zero, I mean it doesn't cross the threshold in the polls to even to enter Israel's parliament, the Knesset, in next election. And the Likud is cut by half. One of the reasons for this drop, huge drop in number, is because the secular and the religious people in this country, religious as is non-ultra-Orthodox.
Religious Zionist, modern
religious
Orthodox.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Religious Zionist, conservative, and light religious people, they're all doing military mandatory service. The only people who do not do it are Arabs and ultra-Orthodox. So that's the big deal. Netanyahu was sitting late last night with his colleagues from United Torah, Judaism, and Shas, and was not able to reach any kind of compromise. They are unwilling to contribute in any way.
Okay, back up for a second. When we say that this is going to happen on April 1st, that you said the government will have to start recruiting the ultra-Orthodox, and that the funding to the ultra-Orthodox yeshivas and Torah study institutions will be cut. Just explain that for a second, just for the sake of our listeners. Obviously, the IDF is the one who recruits soldiers. So when we say that the government is going to recruit, explain what you mean by that.
So every yeshiva student in Israel is being financed through the yeshiva, not personally, for studying the Torah. And this is a condition for being exempt from military. If the yeshiva submit a proof or a note saying, I have thousands of students in my yeshiva, they are all being exempt from being recruited. This is the way it works. Now, through the years, the numbers have grown so big. And this was used as a way to just avoid going to the military. You just have to declare that you are a yeshiva student. Your yeshiva get paid, and the military doesn't get to recruit you. And through the years, this became as a way to just, you know, not show up. I mean, many of the students, as we all know by investigative reportings and by, you know, the way things are going, many people are just signing to study, but they're not really studying. They're not, what they're doing with their spare time as an 18-year-old, they're just going out to work. The problem is this, the arrangement. The state says, if you're studying Torah from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., you are probably, you can't work, right? So those people, when they are working, they actually, you know, they make a fraud because they sign up to study. They're not really studying. They're working because they cannot be hired. They are working in what we call, you know, gray or black money. They're being paid in cash. So the country loses twice. It doesn't get them as manpower for the military. And also the country doesn't get taxpayers' money because they're not paying taxes. They're being paid in cash. Also, it sends those young people to work in those type of works.
Murky, gray. Mm-hmm.
You know, they can work as you know, as a seller in a store or but they can never proceed to academics or to high level of proficiency in any type of field of work. So it sends them to poverty in their, you know, in their life, working as machinery or whatever. And so I think we call it's April Fool's Day, right? Because everybody's just, you know, not telling the truth here. We think at this point of time that because of their rabbis and their spiritual leaders, none of them is going to actually be recruited. The only thing that may happen is that when they will stop studying the Torah, they will actually need to get a real job with paycheck, a written paycheck, and start paying taxes. That's, you know, one of the aspects of this issue. But as per recruitment, since the leadership of this public is saying out loud, we rather die by being murdered by Arabs and not going into the military, or we rather leave the country and not going into the military, we think that not many of them are actually going to join the military. The only thing that's going to happen, maybe, is that the government will stop finance this way of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and as you say, April Fool's Day, very fittingly, this all might come to a head on April 1st, which is this Monday. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, we will talk more about how this issue is affecting Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, what it looks like for him right now.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so Tal, back to our beleaguered prime minister. You wrote earlier this week in an op-ed that was first in Zman Yisrael in Hebrew, translated into English for Times of Israel's pages, that Netanyahu's moves over the last years, certainly over the last months and weeks, are all about strengthening his own political base, really including everything that's happened since October 7th. So it was a very coherent piece. Give it to us here. Tell us how you got to this thinking and really where you see him right now. Where is he right now? Because it seems like he is just looking for a way out, looking to figure out what's going to save him.
Right, Jessica. So the way it looks from the side is just that Netanyahu has a strategic plan for the next couple of hours at a time. It doesn't seem that he is even able to consider what's going to be my next day. For example, last, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday looked like hell. He was issuing an ultimatum to the United States president saying, if you are not vetoing the UN resolution, I will not send my people to... I mean, is this a threat from a country in war who needs a dire need of backing from this big and amazing country? And our prime minister actually sends an ultimatum in a minute, and then a few minutes later, the UN representative to the American ambassador to the UN they didn't even look at his ultimatum. It was just I don't want to say hilarious, but it was very sad. Who do you think you're sending an ultimatum to? And then obviously within 24 hours later, he's trying to get his people, this is Hanegbi and Dermer, back to DC begging for attention. So, I mean, this is a strategy that held a few minutes because the ultimatum didn't work. Then it held, you know, a couple of more hours. Then at the same time, a minister from his government stepped down. This minister, Gideon Saar, former justice minister, was witnessing the entire debacle at the UN and even did not take the few hours to say, I will postpone my announcement of stepping down for the next day. He was just doing it in the same couple of hours. Then at the same time, Netanyahu was gathering with his ultra-Orthodox loyalists in his chambers trying to solve this recruitment issue, reaching no conclusion. And, you know, people from within Israel, they're looking at this and saying, we are in a war in Gaza. We have 134 hostages, you know, held in a gunpoint in the tunnels. We are under bombardment in the Nord. We have 150,000 internally displaced people. We have no prospects as per relationship with the United States. Things are collapsing at the UN. Things are collapsing inside Israel. And what you do is mastering a plan how to avoid recruitment of hundreds of thousands of yeshiva students. This is what you're doing with your time. You know, from the size of Israelis, it looked like he's spiraling, Jessica. And this is what my piece was about. You know, everything is done to appease those Likud voters, you know, when we talk about the Likud base or Likud voters, or just to stay in power. This is, you know, Likud voters, it's 100,000 people, that's it. From an entire 10 million of a society, you are just working to make sure the Likud small base is happy because we stay in government and you want to stay in government for your own future. And in order to do that, you're willing to just tell the military, sacrifice this recruitment, the draft bill, who is direly is in a dire need because we're losing so many people. You are not even working on saving Israel Upper Galilee from those attacks. You are, you know, you didn't even visit the communities who are displaced. People who are parents of soldiers who are kidnapped inside Gaza are begging for a meeting with you. But then you sit with Aryeh Deri and Moshe Gafni and Goldknopf, all of those coming from different sect of the ultra-Orthodox society, in order to make sure they're happy with no contribution to a mandatory service. So, you know, it seems that many of the things that Netanyahu, and this is the piece about, many of the things that Netanyahu have tried in recent months are not working. He's, you know, campaigning on total victory. The public doesn't like it. He's campaigning against Benny Gantz, saying Benny Gantz will give you a Palestinian state. The public doesn't like it. He is now campaigning against the sitting U.S. president. The public doesn't like it. We see the Likud is cut by half in polls. And Netanyahu is, you know, one failure after another. And it seems like he's, I mean, I don't want to predict things because it's very difficult in Israel when, you know, when I know even John Kirby, the national security spokesman, who is like a great supporter of this country, was flatly rejecting Netanyahu's spin around the UN Security Council resolution. He was just saying, you know, we didn't even change our policy. We would love to see the people, you know, Dermer and Hegbe in the White House. They just totally rejected all of his statements. And he is now, 24 hours later, he's retreating and sending the people after he said it's an ultimatum. So was the ultimatum expired? Then he came out, you know, a couple of hours later, he came out and said, it was not an ultimatum to the United States. I just wanted to show the terror organization that they cannot cripple us, that we are standing steadfast against, you know, the UN. Something, it's kind of a weird statement. So what does it mean? Well, now that you are sending the people, it means that we are deterred by the United States when you are talking to the Hamas. You understand what I'm saying. This is just, the twists and turns are so quick and so fast. Nobody can even follow the spins and the, you know, we get our head spinned by all of this messaging into all of those directions.
So obviously neither of us know what actually is going to happen next. Although it does seem with Gideon Saar leaving and with this flip-flopping all the time, and of course with the ultra-Orthodox draft issue that is really rearing its head right now, that there is a sense that things might be coming to a head in a way that we don't necessarily know how it's all going to fall out, but it does have that feeling. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. If there is an obligation to recruit the ultra-Orthodox, then the ultra-Orthodox party may step down. If there is some sort of an exemption, then Benny Gantz may step down. And people are not happy. People inside the Likud are criticizing the prime minister. Defense Minister Gallant is just handling his own type of policy. He's like totally detached, you know, prime minister and the defense minister hardly talking to each other. The entire war cabinet is dysfunctional. The talks to release the hostages collapsed and people are, you know, depressed and upset about that. So I can't tell you what is the breaking point, but we definitely feel in a carousel, you know, when your head is just, you can't even see straight anymore.
Yeah. Okay, and we're just going to finish off this podcast with a word about Senator Joe Lieberman, who passed away at the age of 82. He had a fall at home, and there were complications from that that caused his death. He is, of course, was a great friend of Israel. His daughter, husband, and four children made Aliyah to Israel in 2018. Anything you want to say about Joe Lieberman, Tal?
So Joe Lieberman was, I don't want to say regular, but since he had grandkids in this country, we actually got to see him on the streets of Tel Aviv walking from time to time. I even saw him once, you know, from afar, but it was a rare, you know, a rare look to see a U.S., you know, distinguished former senator just walking the street with his grandkids like any other grandparent in Israel. He was a great friend of this country and recognized in this country by many to be such a good friend. People were, you know, admiring the fact that he went up all the way to become, you know, just a prominent senator, but also a candidate for vice president. We were following closely his departure from the Democratic Party and his alliance, you know, with John McCain and with others. By the way, he was a great friend with many of the conservative on the Senate, and one of his very good friends, Lindsey Graham, he's in Israel as we speak right now, and he wrote, he wrote on his Twitter page that he is, he said, I am now in Israel, so many emotions, this is devastatingly sad. And he said, he wrote something to Hadassah, the wife, and then he also said, the good news is that Joe is now in the hands of loving God. The bad news is John McCain is giving him an earful about how he screwed up things are. It wasn't a headline here last night when we heard the news. Netanyahu issued a statement immediately, like in a minute. I think he met Joe Lieberman for so many times when he was here.
Yeah, Baruch Dayan Emet. And we will obviously see what happens with all of these different issues that are really on the breaking news front right now. In the meantime, thank you, Tal, for being with me on today's briefing. It's been good to see you.
Thank you, Jessica.
And thanks for listening to us. We will be back again tomorrow with another installment. This episode was produced by The Podwaves. Always feel free to write us podcast@timesofisrael.com and to recommend us to other listeners wherever you find your podcasts. Until next time, take care. Have yourselves a good day.